Welcome back. It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. You can always listen online as well at WKAR.org and track down past episodes of our program, past segments. Many Michigan deer hunters consider the opening day of firearm season a state holiday. Thousands of sports people joined the hunt starting this past Saturday. Last year, 43% of Michigan hunters were successful for a total of about 385,000 deer harvested. Equally important to hunter planning is the proper management of Michigan's hunting lands. That's where Gib King comes in. King is a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service based in East Lansing. He helps private landowners create individualized plans that care for their habitats. WKAR's Peter Wharf spoke with Gib King about this year's hunt and his work.
What I mainly do is I work with landowners to basically evaluate their property, give them all the technical assistance they need, but then maybe find a project that meets our goals as well. And a lot of our projects are wetland restorations. And so wetland restorations are really important, not only for our trust resource benefits, the landowner's benefits for overall wildlife habitat, as every critter, you know, is attracted to a wetland pretty much, but also for water quality and overall environmental, you know, benefits. So wetlands are a bread and butter. I do probably 200 acres of wetlands per year for the last 14 years. I cover the west side of the state, and there's five other biologists covering pretty much the remainder of the lower peninsula of Michigan in where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service partners for Fish and Wildlife Program. So wetlands are a big thing. We do grasslands as well. What grasslands we like to do in conjunction with the wetlands that aids in buffering the wetland, aids in migratory bird nesting habitat. Larger grasslands are really important because for migratory grassland-associated bird species, and there's a whole suite of grassland bird species. Obviously, one of the reasons why these are our trust resources is the populations are, you know, of questionable nature, and that's mainly because of habitat loss. We've lost in Michigan, in some areas, 90% of our wetlands overall, like 50% of our wetlands. The UP kind of equals us out a little bit because they haven't lost as much. We've lost over 99% of our native grassland habitats. A lot of that's due, obviously, to agriculture, urban sprawl, removal of natural processes, disturbance processes that perpetuate those types of habitats.
Gib, so, at what rate are we losing those types of wetland and grasslands? Is that accelerating? What is the movement? I'm trying to get a feel of that over the last decade or so.
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, since, I think, in the 80s, Bush Sr. put in a no net loss law, basically, to wetlands, and that really helped protect our existing wetlands. And we've experienced, I think, no net loss as a result of that kind of law and practice. And some of these conservation programs like ours that are voluntary or privately associated programs that focus on actually putting more wetland acres or better wetland acres on the ground may be reversing the trend a little bit. I don't know for a fact. Yeah. But as of now, we're at least no net loss, and hopefully the wetlands that we're out there working on, they're a wetland of some sort, but they're usually degraded or drained. And so we're increasing the size and the productivity and the quality of those wetlands by restoring them. So hopefully we're getting better wetlands if we're not getting more wetlands on the ground. And that's, you know, that's nationally. When a wetland is regulated and it's going to be destroyed or degraded due to development and stuff like that, now there's laws that make them mitigate. So they're supposed to replace what they destroy. And some of those mitigation programs are 1-for-1. Some of them are 3-for-1. So if they screw up 1 acre wetland, they may have to build 3 acres somewhere else nearby.
Yeah, so builders or developers by law have to come into this process with a replacement program. Is that right?
Yes, yep. And there's a couple different ones out there. I'm not that familiar with them, but I know they exist, and they have varying levels of success. as far as the wetland on the ground, if they're replacing like for like, which they're supposed to be doing.
I'm speaking with Gib King of U.S. Fish and Wildlife here in East Lansing, Michigan. And we're talking about development of private lands and programs that go along with restoration, conservation, and development in Michigan. How many landowners do you or your region work with?
Probably on average, just myself, I probably work with 30 to 35 landowners a year. And that's really just the landowners that I actually do projects on. I may come in contact with, you know, upwards of 60 landowners per year. And then if they don't have a project that necessarily fits our program, I may refer them to other programs or give them technical assistance in how they can achieve their goals on their property for wildlife.
How do you go about evaluating an application for an improvement? Take me through that process a little bit.
A lot of landowners hear from us through word of mouth, through conservation districts, and, you know, contractors, actually. We don't do a whole lot of advertising, but a landowner will call me, and they'll have basic interests. I'll chat with them on the phone, and I'll get information about their property from them, and I'll bring it up on aerial photos and maps and soil maps and do kind of an in-office assessment of the property and try and figure out what their main goals are and see if ours align. And then if the maps look right and even if their ideas aren't quite on line with ours, I think most of us as biologists will go out to visit the site and maybe use it as an opportunity to help educate the landowner. And maybe the project they were looking for was a deep water pond, but they end up with a shallow water wetland, and that meets their goals even more. They didn't even know they had those goals. And so basically it's a phone call, a conversation, and we would start a folder on that person and schedule a time to go visit the site and walk it. And if we can walk it with the landowner, that's actually really beneficial. Maybe not the most time effective for us, but it's beneficial for the landowner to kind of get a real good understanding of A, their property, and B, what we might be able to do, and try and paint a picture of what it might look like if we were able to do something.
Right. So that's the property evaluation process that you've described.
Yep. Okay, so that's the process to get in the door once a project is, and we're talking mainly about wetlands at this point, but and wetlands usually require DEQ permits. Michigan Department of Environmental Quality administers the regulatory program for protecting wetlands, and so we have to still go through that process. I, as the biologist, will basically service, you know, take the project from inception to fruition and go through all those compliance ordinances and stuff like that for the landowner. There may be some local stuff that the landowner may need to handle, like a soil erosion permit or something like that, but we assist with that as well. But so then once they're in the door, basically all the work's on us. For a landowner, there's really very little, if nothing, to do other than, you know, we encourage cost share. We're supposed to be a 50% cost share program. Oftentimes we get cost share from outside sources with big NACA grants. NACA would be the North American Wetland Conservation Act, and they have grants that we work with collaboratively with Ducks Unlimited and some other folks. And so we can get leverage money through that grant and kind of cover the landowner's portion. So a lot of our projects are 100% cost share, not all of them. And so the landowner would sign a 10-year agreement, basically, if we've decided we want to do a project, say it's a wetland and a grassland, and maybe we were doing some early successional forest on there. We kind of just play a numbers game and figure out how much all that stuff's going to cost, where the money's going to come from, and if the landowner can put in portions. Some of it I'm going to require some cost share.
Gib, you're with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, not DNR, but I did want to ask you about the deer hunting season forecast. What are you hearing about the lower half of the lower peninsula?
The forecast, and I've heard, you know, the forecast for the UP is pretty tough. They've had some bad winters, and I think it's going to be another bad winter. I think they're having a good acorn crop up there like we are down here, so that might, you know, benefit the UP. But I know the numbers for the deer are down up there. Lower Peninsula of Michigan and northern lower, I mean, I think they got hit pretty hard by the winter too, but not nearly as bad as the UP. So I've been hearing from friends and stuff that they're seeing plenty of deer and some decent ones. They've done some antler point restrictions up in a lot of the northern lower, and I think that's going to help long run. They've got a lot more food base there, and so they should be doing fine. We had EHD here in southern Michigan a couple years back, and some areas, I think pockets from my landowners that I'm talking to, they're still hurting on numbers, but they've come back pretty good, pretty well, and the numbers are strong, and they're actually probably seeing more quality bucks, so some of that thinning of the herd may have been necessary and maybe create a stronger herd. From what I understand of EHD, I think it's called epizootic hemorrhaging disease, EHD. Once the deer survive and make it through, I think they're not susceptible to the disease any longer, and they can pass that trait along, so it'll make the species adapt well to it. And I guess I found all this out from one of my DNR biologist friends. Who does deer check stations. They check the hooves to see if there's sign of if they went through the disease, because the hooves will all be kind of like look like you have a foot fungus or nail fungus or something, and they look there's white marks and stuff. And
oh yeah, really?
That's a sign that the deer survived, and so they're kind of get. I think they're doing some science on how many did survive, got the disease, and actually lived through it. So that'll be interesting to pay attention to in the future. But overall, I mean, the corn's up everywhere where I'm around, where I am, and a lot of southern Michigan, and I don't see it coming down anytime soon. So that's gonna make tough hunting for some folks that are near big corn areas. When it comes down, though, it's gonna be game on for a lot of guys. So personally, I had a great bow season. Seen a lot of real nice deer. I saw a lot of small ones last year, and some of them have matured into nice bucks. So I think it's going to be a good year. This cold weather ought to be interesting. It's going to get some deer moving, and I think that's going to really help out.
All right. Well, good luck.
I appreciate it. I already got a nice 10 with the bow, so
nice.
Looking to fill my second tag.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Gib King is biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service here in East Lansing. Gib, good luck again, and thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.